Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Are you meditating enough?
Probably not.
Hey guys, welcome back to Energy Matters, where we guilt you into meditating more and shame you into it.
That's high quality meditation right there.
Quality meditation. And you know this, like, everyone is meditating for 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, and I love it. I'm glad everyone's meditating, but I'm more of a longer sitter. I know you are too, Cody. I think if you really want to get past some barriers, get past some mental blocks, some limitations, go deep within yourself, you have to ultimately sit longer. And whatever technique you find to help yourself do that, it's important at a certain point to make that decision, like, I'm going to sit longer and really go for this. So I just wanted to start this intro for this episode out with a little bit of an injection of meditate longer.
A little bit of a pep talk, right? A
little pep talk for you Energy Matters listeners. Don't just listen to this podcast. Get off your ass and sit down. Close your eyes and get into it. And with that, we've got an amazing guest today, Dr. Dawson Church. He's a PhD award-winning author whose best-selling book, The Genie in Your Genes, explores how our minds and our emotions actually affect our genes, which we talk about in this episode. He's also the founder of the National Institute for Integrative Healthcare. He contributes to the Energy Psychology Journal. He's got a lot of research out there and teachings that relate to emotional freedom therapy. You can find him at a number of places, which we'll dive into with him and in the outro. But Dr. Church was really an incredible guest. We got really deep into some science of genetics and how the mind affects the body. And I was just like, can we go for another 3 hours? This is incredible. So we're really super excited to share this episode. Before we jump in, quick announcement. If you want to be on our newsletter, energymatterspodcast.com, so we can send you all the episodes and all the other cool stuff happening, which includes Costa Rica. If you want to really immerse yourself for a week in meditation, in energy work, and hang out with me and Cody, which I don't know why anyone would want to hang out with us, but just in case you do, I think as of the time of this recording, we have a couple spots left for our Costa Rica retreat, April 28th to May 4th, revampretreats.com, or on our website, you can find all the info. Cody always makes me plug everything. This is so unfair.
So funny. And by the end of that retreat, the answer to the question, are you meditating enough, would be what?
Definitely. Will be a yes. Yeah. Or we're leaving you in Costa Rica. You don't get to come home. So, Dr. Dawson Church, let's get into it.
Hey, Energy Matters. Welcome back to another episode. I'm here with my co-host, David. Hey, David.
Hello.
And today we have a very special guest. Dr. Dawson Church is coming to us live from Santa Rosa, my old stomping grounds. And we're here to talk today about kind of the link between emotions, energy, thoughts, and genetics. You know, it's having done energy work for many, many years, there's always kind of been this thing where some of the things that's happening in energy awareness and metaphysics, it always feels like science is kind of catching up to us. You know, things that 30 years ago, we're kind of working energy and we see things happening and say, okay, this is what's happening. And then suddenly research starts to happen around that. And sure enough, that's what's been happening. And Dr. Dawson has been really studying and furthering this awareness of how energy affects matter and genetics and what's happening on the forefront of that development. So welcome, Dawson. Nice to have you here.
It's great to be here. And I love that focus because you're right. 10, 20, 30 years ago, energy work was thought to be hopelessly fringe, woo-woo, way out on the left field and not with much relevance to the real world of matter. And now what's been happening, as we'll see in the coming hour, is that energy is right in the forefront of new research. And we're showing now that energy has profound effects on matter. So I'm excited to share this, and I just so appreciate the focus that both you, Cody, and you, David, have on making people aware of the shifts that are happening when they do energy work.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And Dawson, so me and Cody are very much laymen. We are really good at closing our eyes and sitting still. But you are very good at research and explaining what happens when we do that. And before the show, we were just chatting a bit about some of the new research in genetics, epigenetics, and how consciousness research is really taking some steps. And we all know that, you know, meditation lowers stress levels, you know, it has all these incredible biological effects. But if we could just start maybe on some of the research that you've been doing and the consciousness research and the biological effects of meditation and other energy techniques and kind of what your focus has been on, I think our audience would love to hear some of what you've been doing.
Well, the two techniques I've studied most, written about most, are meditation, and the second one is emotional freedom techniques, also known as tapping, which is basically using acupressure. So rather than acupuncture needles, people just apply pressure or tap on acupuncture points, and that also shifts the energy flows in the body and then shifts the physiology of the body. So that's been my focus of writing and research for the last 20 years or so. And all of our initial research was focused on the psychology of what shifts when you tap, when you meditate, when you do anything that changes your consciousness. And we found in some of our early research that massive changes were happening in those in the psychological domain. Just for example, we did a very early pilot study of veterans with PTSD. And this was right after the Iraq War started in 2002. In 2003, we began to look at veterans coming back from Iraq, and a lot of them had PTSD, just the way Vietnam veterans had PTSD in the 1960s, early 1970s, before the Vietnam War ended. So we saw the same pattern of these Iraq War veterans with PTSD. And then we did this tiny pilot study, and we found that they had a massive reduction in their levels of symptoms, like flashbacks and nightmares, intrusive thoughts, hypervigilance, all the characteristics of stress that we saw in Vietnam veterans. So we then got a very large-scale clinical trial going nationally in the U.S., and eventually that expanded and took in a lot of veterans, and we found the same thing. We found that their levels of symptoms dropped by over 60% in just six sessions. And this was a time, again, 2005, 2006, when PTSD was widely regarded as incurable. And the American Psychiatric Association had done a big study of all the research on PTSD. And in 2006, they said, basically, it's incurable. The best thing you can do is manage it with drugs. And that was like the best thing that they could think of back then. Now, of course, we know that PTSD is readily curable, that over in the most advanced research, over 90% of people with PTSD recover using energy therapies. And so that was the initial focus of my research, and the research I did with colleagues was looking at psychology. How did depression symptoms change? How did anxiety symptoms change? How did PTSD change? Hostility, all those other kinds of psychological characteristics that affect people. But we then began to think about biology. I remember sitting once in a big conference, and I watched trainees, people who were just learning these acupressure-based techniques, doing work with stressed people. And the trainees were really new to these techniques. They were doing their best, but they were really unskilled. And I noticed that even though their skill level was low, that these stressed people they were working with were still getting big and good results. And so I began to notice that as these people who were so stressed were being worked with by these trainees, their shoulders relaxed, their breathing deepened. If they were crying or flushed, they calmed down. Their respiration, their heart rate, all of these biological functions became much more regulated and calm. So I then said, well, my next big question to myself was, okay, what's happening inside their cells? And that's when I designed a study of cortisol, because cortisol is a really handy marker. Adrenaline and cortisol are your two main stress hormones. And if the quantity of adrenaline and cortisol in your body is going down, that means you're getting less stressed. If it's going up, you're getting more stressed. And so I then began to study cortisol levels in stressed people. And we did a research trial with three groups. One group got tapping, acupressure, one group got talk therapy, and one group got rest. This was a triple-blind, randomized controlled trial published in the oldest psychiatry journal in the US, a very prestigious journal, very rigorous study. And we found that the levels of anxiety and depression in the acupressure group dropped twice as much as in the talk therapy group and the rest group, and their levels of cortisol dropped precipitously. In fact, when I was working with a lab and I was emailing them looking to get these results, the cortisol levels of people before and after, and my results were being delayed by several weeks. I eventually was phoning the lab saying, what gives here? What's going on? Why is it taking so long to get these cortisol results back from your technicians? And the head of the lab eventually called me back and said, Dr. Church, we've been recalibrating our equipment and running these tests over and over again because your results are anomalous. Cortisol cannot fall that quickly. But it did. And now, actually, I just got some more results back from the same lab last week. And now they're like, oh, yeah, it's more stuff than Dr. Church. We're going to see those cortisol levels just plummet when people start to apply these stress reduction methods. So that is the most interesting thing to me, is that it's not just psychological. It's not just a spiritual experience. You don't just feel better psychologically. There are real objective things happening inside your cells and the molecules of your cells. So energy techniques are affecting matter, mind, consciousness. It's having not just a small effect on matter, but sometimes massive effects on matter down to the level of hormones, enzymes, and genes in your body.
Wow. Wonderful.
So let me jump in here. Dr. Dawson, well, wait a minute, let me not say Dr. Dawson. That was a really great point. And it kind of brings me to a question that I have about what's happening in the psychology of change. You know, many years ago, not that many years ago, actually, it really was thought that we couldn't change all that much, right? And then as the advent of fMRI came out and we could watch someone's brain like in action, suddenly this concept of neuroplasticity, you know, beyond the age of whatever it was, depending on who you were, age 3 or 7 or 20, really hit the scene. And suddenly this idea that you could change and that your brain changes all the way till the day you die became, very commonplace. But the idea that our genes change is kind of a new idea, I think. And so, you know, gene awareness or gene study has been really just mapping the genes, like something that's kind of static. But this idea of epigenetics and epigenetic medicine, what is that about? And I think it incorporates the idea that our genes change and are interacting with our environment until the day we die. Is that right? Or am I off on that?
It is. And I want to just pick up on the idea of change firstly, and then go to genes and how genes change. And I want to do that because personally, I had a really difficult and frustrating time with personal transformation and change in my own life. And so when I was 15 years old, I went and lived on an ashram. I was meditating. I was doing energy healing. I spent my later teenage years doing that. My 20s, I was doing that. And I worked on myself a lot because I had a traumatic childhood and I had a lot of personal hurdles to overcome. And it was hard. And I watched it being hard for my friends who were meditation teachers, who were yoga teachers, who were on various spiritual paths. There was no magic spiritual path. Some were Buddhists, some were Hindus, some were Christians, some were spiritual but not religious, some were Jewish, some were traditional, some were alternative. But they all wrestled with these same problems. And if you read the history of spirituality and spiritual teachers, there are all these scandals with people acting unethically, financially, sexually, in various dimensions of their lives. And so what this points to is that change is hard. And I know I read books, I went to workshops, I studied with teachers, I did all this stuff. And I did change, but we saw small amounts of change happening. And often you'd work with a client, say, in psychotherapy for years and years and years, and they might make small incremental change. And so that's what we find with meditation, with other techniques, is that, yeah, people can change sometimes, but it's a real slog to change. And what's happened just in the last little while, I mean, I'm talking about maybe 5-7 years, is we've discovered new psychotechnologies that produce rapid change. Like when I say 60%+ drop in PTSD symptoms, in this case, 6 to 10 sessions, that's awesome change. In my new book, Mind to Matter, I'm talking about people who had cancer, and I have several case studies of people who had cancer, and they literally have a diagnosis, and then they do something dramatic. I had a friend of mine who had a breast cancer diagnosis very recently. And so rather than doing the whole medical route, she did the energy route. And she phoned energy healers, had them work with her, did Qigong, did tapping, meditated, got really serious about her spiritual practice. And 3 months later, got a new cancer scan, new scan, and her body was cancer-free. And it astonishes me that we now have these ways of shifting ourselves. Now, that's psychologically, she felt better, but that's physiological. There are genes called oncogenes, cancer genes. And what we're seeing, for example, in one study of, and again, the two methods I teach and focus on are EFT tapping and acupressure, basically, and meditation. And so a lot of the research I do is on one of those two things. In one study done by a colleague of mine who's a psychotherapist, the subjects got a genome test before and after a one-hour EFT tapping acupressure session. And in that 1 hour, 72 genes changed, including genes that control metabolism, genes that control immunity, genes that affect various kinds of cancers, throat cancer, liver cancer, esophageal cancer, various kinds of cancer genes literally were turned off, or the activity of anti-cancer genes was turned on just by that 1 hour psychotherapy session using acupressure. Another study I did with Dr. Joe Dispenza. Joe and I were looking at people in one of his advanced workshops doing 4 days of intensive meditation. We found that 8 key regulatory genes were turned on. 3 of those had to do with suppressing cancer. So the remarkable thing is that as you reduce your stress level, it's not just a subjective feeling of change, it's an object of change happening in your body. And while change was so hard for people back along the path, you look at, you know, the old religious communities of 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, people had to go into a cloister or into the desert or into the high mountains and spend decades perfecting their meditation practice. Now we bring a Vietnam veteran or an Iraq or Afghanistan veteran into a psychotherapy office. We give them a series of sessions, may only be 5 or 10 sessions, and just a whole bunch of that stress falls away. And we can measure those changes down to the level of their brainwaves and of their gene expressions. So we now are at this absolutely remarkable place in medical history where we can change. We do have tools that help people change. They're not perfect. They're not a panacea. But again, in my life and in training people, doing live workshops, literally we'll have a whole room full of people that will have a simultaneous massive breakthrough, and their lives are different. And we can test that both genetically through their brain function and subjectively in terms of anxiety and depression. And I'll give you just one example of that from this new book. There was a guy who's a TV reporter in Australia for a program called Catalyst, but he was also a PhD astrophysicist. So even though he worked as a reporter, he had a doctorate in astrophysics, and he was really skeptical about all this stuff, meditation, mindfulness, tapping, didn't really have a strong belief in it. But he read some of the research and thought, you know, I'm going to give it a try. So he went on an 8-week mindfulness program. But before he went to start the program, there was a team of researchers at Monash University who studied him and his brain function intensively, including a comprehensive MRI picture of the volume of each part of his brain. So they measured, you know, the frontal lobes, they measured the temporal lobes, measured the hippocampus, the midbrain, the hindbrain. They measured all the different parts of his brain. He then began to practice these techniques. And after just 2 weeks, he found he had less road rage. He was less irritated by people at work. He was much calmer. He felt much better. And then in 8 weeks, they got him back into that lab at Monash University, gave him this whole huge battery of tests again. His psychological functioning had improved a lot. When they put him in the MRI and they measured his brain regions, they found that some parts of his brain had changed, had grown in volume by several percentage points in just 8 weeks, 3%, 4%, 5% in only 2 months. But the part of his brain that had changed the most in those 2 months was the part that had to do with emotional regulation. It's called the dentate gyrus. It's part of the emotional midbrain, part of the hippocampus. His dentate gyrus in his brain had grown by 22.8% in 8 weeks. And that's just massive neurological change. So that's what's happening to us now. We are able to use these techniques, and these sophisticated new technologies are showing us that we're not just feeling better, that literally our bodies are changing, the enzymes are changing, the genes are changing, and our whole brain function starts to change, which then, as our minds and consciousness change, produces new matter in our brains. And this, I think, is just beyond exciting, that change is possible, it's not that hard, and it's producing big effects inside our bodies.
Incredible. That's just incredible. And so, Dawson, for example, you're saying that if I'm meditating or doing tapping and my thoughts change, that translates to actually changing the gene. Can scientists explain how that actually happens, how I can have a thought and then how that could switch a gene on or off?
Let me just ask you, have you had a really bad experience in the last couple of years? Like, you know, something like a car crash or a nearly sliding off a cliff, anything bad happened?
Yeah, actually, I went snowboarding with Cody and I definitely fell. <Uh-oh>. So that was tough. Yeah, I took a good tumble.
Okay, so how did you feel after the tumble in your body?
Oh, I just kept thinking I want to punch Cody, but in my body, in that fight or flight kind of painful shock right away, I would say.
Right, painful shock, fight or flight. We all know how that feels like in our bodies. And so when we're in that state, our bodies are changing. And in response to a threat to our survival, our heart speeds up, our breathing becomes shallow, our muscles tense, blood drains out of our brains into our muscles. All kinds of physiological shifts happen in our bodies. And all those shifts are mediated by genes and by hormones. And so when you have that big rise in cortisol, when you feel that sense of shock in your body, when you have the bad experience, when you have the physically threatening experience, that's something that triggers gene expression. And so your body only knows how to make all that cortisol, all that adrenaline, because the genes that code for that are being turned on. And that's perfectly normal and natural. Like if you were being attacked by a dog, there was a big barking dog that got off its chain and ran at you with its jaws dripping with saliva and snarling at you, you'd very naturally want to escape. You'd be in fight or flight. You'd look for a stick. You'd run away. You'd do something appropriately as you have that adrenaline and cortisol going up in your body. And so that's the way Mother Nature designed us to operate. What we do, though, is we human beings will then talk about, whether it's the snowboarding accident, whether it's the dog, whether it's the car crash, we'll remember the bad stuff. So here I am talking about this event, and it's been 6 months, it's maybe been 6 years. And as we talk about that and vividly remember it, all of the emotions start to occur that were activated by the experience. So even though the experience is now an old experience, it was 6 months ago or 10 years ago, as we tell the story, we are having shifts in our body. I worked with one guy as part of that cortisol clinical trial, and he was a male nurse in his 50s. And he happened to get randomized into the group that got talk therapy. And so we measured his cortisol before and after that. And before and after the talk therapy session, his cortisol rose by about 50%. So he had a big rise in cortisol. And his tragedy in his life was that he was a single guy in his 50s, and he'd really been wanting a relationship. And then he met somebody, he had this relationship for a while, and then she ended the relationship. And so the vivid memory he had was driving her to the airport and her leaving, her walking into the terminal. That was like the last time he saw her. And as he talked about this event, he had tears in his eyes. This was like the huge grief and loss of his life. And this had happened like 6 or 7 years before. So even though it happened all at like a time ago, when he did talk therapy and talked about that, his levels of cortisol rose by 50%. We then got him back in the lab a week later, and we did the same thing. We gave him a 1 hour therapy session. We tested his cortisol before and after. And again, even though this thing has happened a long time ago, as he talks about her leaving, he's crying, he's upset, his face is flushed, he has all the physiological signs of the stress response. And so that's what we do. Even when it's been a long time ago, if we're still triggered by it, it affects our bodies. And so we then did a tapping session with him for an hour, and we found that his cortisol in that hour of tapping, same event, talking about the same incident, his level of cortisol dropped by almost 50%. So huge drop in cortisol. And that's what's happening. So we think about the bad thing that happened a long time ago, and as we remember that, our cortisol level rises. And if we do this repeatedly, there was a huge study done of patients at Kaiser Permanente, a big hospital chain in California, and they looked at the health histories of 17,400 patients, and they found that those people with unresolved childhood emotional trauma had more heart disease, more cancer, more diabetes, more high blood pressure. Every major disease, these people who had unresolved emotional trauma, they had more of it. And these patients were in their 50s. And so this childhood trauma had happened when they were, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9, whatever it was. That childhood trauma had happened almost 50 years earlier. And now 50 years later, they have high cortisol, they're highly stressed. And by not dealing with those emotions, it starts to really have a bad effect on your body over time. So yeah, those memories, it is so important that we come to peace with them, we resolve them, we deal with our childhoods, with the negative things of our past, we live our lives free of those influences. Because if we do that, then we live in the space of emotional freedom, we have great lives, we're living in the present moment. But if we are trapped by our past in that way, we end up reenacting it, we think about it, we drive our levels of cortisol sky high. We turn on all those stress genes, even though there's no barking dog, there's no snowboard accident. But by talking about it, remembering it vividly, I can turn on all those genes just as though that bad thing was happening right in the here and now. So again, genes are turned on, all those stress genes are turned on either by a real thing happening or by remembering a thing, or even an imagination about something that's never happened, never likely to happen. Just anything you think about that stresses you is turning on those cortisol and other stress genes.
So if you're just worrying over and over, stressing about the future, you're literally switching genes on.
Yep. Yep, hundreds of them.
Cody, you better start meditating more.
The cool thing is you look at meditators and see that their genes literally are changing. It's not just that subjectively they feel that someone says, "Oh, I feel a lot better now, I've done meditation." And what I translate it into is, okay, their cortisol is dropping. Their serotonin and dopamine in their brains is regulating. Their DHEA, their main cell healing hormone, is rising. All of these things are happening as you feel better subjectively when you meditate.
Right. So there's a real physiological change.
Big one.
Yeah. And the reason I kind of brought up the question about change is because I think how we think about change really determines how much we can conceptualize and actively create change, right? There's kind of this fatalist idea that we have, especially around genes, right? The old kind of, as you write, the dogma of genetic determinism is that, you know, well, I can't change it because it's just in my genes. So that's like, I'm stuck with that. But this whole idea of epigenetics really opens, kind of blows that out of the water and opens this idea up that we can influence and change our genes. But what is kind of the new thinking in terms of how much determinism in genes, you know, maybe percentage-wise, affects us versus how much environment, our thoughts and feelings, what we eat, you know, everything that we can actually control and do affects and helps to determine you know, where our genes are moving forward?
That's a very good question. And it's good to think about that percentage. And the consensus in science is about 85% of our genes are malleable. They can change. Mm. And about 15% of our genes are fixed. Like, you know, I'm 6'4". I'll never be 7 feet tall. I have brown hair.
He was hoping to be taller, but
yeah, I'll never be 6 feet tall. Damn it. Doctor, can you please do something about these genes and their limitations?
Yeah. Sorry about that. You're pretty much stuck with those, the hand you were dealt when it comes to things like height and eye color and gender. But that's only 15% of the genome. The other 85% is influenced by other things epigenetically. Just for example, simple example, you have clock genes in your body. In my earlier book, The Genie in Your Genes, in The Genie in Your Genes, I talk all about clock genes and about how you wake up in the morning, you wake up at a certain time because your clock genes tell you to do that. In fact, the Nobel Prize for Medicine was won recently by researchers who really discovered how these clock genes work. And you get drowsy around 10 or 11 at night and you go to bed because your clock genes are doing things. Your clock genes are also shifting your cortisol. Around 6 a.m., you have a big spike in cortisol and your highest cortisol levels are around 8 a.m. So 8 a.m., you're feeling perky, you're doing things in your day. And then around 8, 9 p.m., they're dropping and you start to get drowsy around 10 or 11 and you go to sleep point. Cortisol is at its lowest point at 4 a.m. All this is governed by clock genes. What you eat, eat healthy food, and that'll trigger the expression of certain genes. Eat unhealthy food, eat sugar, for example, and then your body is going to have to produce lots of insulin and may develop insulin resistance, and get all of that triggered by diet. So diet affects your body, sleep affects your body, social interactions affect your body tremendously. If you have high-quality relationships, nurturing, loving relationships, one of the phrases I love is elevated emotion. If you have, like my wife and I focus on having interactions throughout our marriage, that produce elevated emotion where we feel good. So if we have two topics to talk about, we choose the one that'll produce elevated emotion. Mm-hmm. And so if you have relationships that do that, all of these things are affecting your gene expression. So 15% of your genome is fixed. That's your skin color and all those other physiological things. 85% of it is being influenced by all these external factors, including what you think, what you have in your consciousness, what you ruminate on, whether you think about good things or bad things, and those simple techniques like tapping, like meditation, that are nudging your genome in one direction or the other.
Incredible. Dawson, I have one last question about genes and then I want to get into some other stuff, but I just really want to ask. So when they did the genome project, they were predicting that there would be over 100,000 genes in the human genome, right? And then when they finished it, there was something like 25,000 genes. We have almost the same amount of genes as a fruit fly, right? If I'm not mistaken. Do you have a theory on where those missing genes are or how we work, you know, with only 25,000 genes? I know there are so many theories about that, but do you have a point of view on that?
Yeah, it was a big puzzle because we knew going into the Human Genome Project that we sequenced the genome of simple organisms like a nematode, a little worm, and we knew that that had over 30,000 genes. We had sequenced things like, you know, a carrot, and we knew some vegetables had over 30,000 genes. So we thought, oh, you know, this big, complicated human being must be over 100,000 genes. And then what's switching those on and off? What's controlling those genes? There must be another 20,000 or so regulatory genes which are running the show. And then we found we only have about 24,000 genes. And it was such a surprise because we didn't really know then about epigenetics. And now we know that a certain triggering a gene to produce several different kinds of byproduct. So the genes essentially produce proteins. And depending on the epigenetics, depending on these like RNAs, microRNAs, various other actors in the epigenome, they're triggering the DNA to produce very different things. Even the same strand of DNA, the same gene, can produce different proteins depending on the epigenetic tags. One of the cool things I've been researching for the last few years now is the epigenetics of stress. And so we're finding that there are certain of these molecules that are directly controlling the genome, and these are changing epigenetically. And again, it's happening in response to stress. So whatever you do to de-stress yourself, you are shifting this, and most of your genome is being influenced by your mental state as well as those other environmental influences.
Mm. Dawson, we only have a few minutes left, but I would love to ask, what are your practices when you get up in the morning? What's your meditation technique? What do you teach when you teach workshops and help people reduce their stress levels?
Well, I know that the two of you teach meditation. And so I will confess, David and Cody, I am a terrible meditator and always have been. When I was 15 years old and did my first meditation class, and the meditation teacher said, meditation is simple. All you have to do is still your mind. I was thinking, are you crazy? Still my mind? Give me a break. This is never going to happen. And here I am in my 60s, and I still cannot still my mind. I just have never succeeded in taming my wild mind. So I meditate every morning, but I helped with a group of scientists around 2008, 2009. I began looking at practices that let people get into a meditative state mechanically. What I mean by that is that we looked at the kind of physiological state a master meditator is in. Somebody who's been practicing for a long time is a really good meditator. And we then had people do certain physiological things that mimic the state of a master meditator. So I helped, collaborated with several other people. We designed this technique called eco-meditation, ECO, eco-meditation. And it's just a series of physiological cues, but they affect your vagus nerve, your main relaxation nerve. They affect various muscle groups in your body. And you just do these very mechanical things. And you do these seven things. And we found that it just produces this very deep meditative state without needing to still the mind or believe in anything or have a spiritual practice or anything like that. It's just a mechanical way of getting into meditation. And so I do that myself every morning. And what happens also, I'll be working on a new book in the next 4 or 5 years on what happens in our bodies when we practice regularly in terms of changing our set points of hormones like cortisol and neurotransmitters like serotonin. And this is really interesting lineage work. So I meditate every day. And what happens when you meditate and you get used to it? When you're doing an easy form of meditation like eco meditation, so you're doing this really simple physiologically based method of meditation, not having to try and calm your mind or do anything advanced, you start to have shifts in your levels of these hormones. Your baseline of cortisol drops. We did one study and we found that people's baseline cortisol in a week of doing this dropped by 37%, which is a massive drop in just a week of practice. Their resting heart rate went down by about 8%. Their blood pressure decreased. All kinds of good changes happening in the body when you do this over time. So I meditate every morning. And then if I get upset during the day, I tap. And again, tapping only takes like a minute or two to do, and then you rapidly get a lot more relaxed. So meditation is the fundamental practice, and it has such remarkable effects on your health and well-being. It is an essential part of being human. If you meditate, you get in touch with who you are. You also get in touch with all of the non-local levels of being. In my new book, Mind to Matter, I talk a lot about non-local mind and about how there is universal consciousness, and about how most people are distracting themselves with television, with media, with social media, with various kinds of substances, with drama and relationships, with work drama. There are all kinds of ways which people aren't tuning in to that pulse of the universe. There is a pulse of the universe. When you get quiet enough meditation, you tune into that. You can hear it. So that pulse of the universe is there, that those messages from the universe are always present for you. It's just that you aren't getting quiet enough to hear them. Mm. So in meditation, you get quiet and you hear them. You then start your day in inspiration and in creativity and in joy and absolutely explosion of just this inspired action and being. So it's powerful to start your day with meditation. And so I advocate doing that. It's just a wonderful way to connect with the universe. You also then open yourself to synchronicity. And so all kinds of synchronous things happen. Like we talked earlier before we went live about Insight Timer. And I've been curious about it. I've been on that site a few times and I thought about maybe doing some meditations for them.
Yeah.
And then turns out you guys do that and gave me some advice and often right. introduced me, the person who runs their programming department. So I had a thought, how about doing meditations for Insight Timer? And then I've done nothing at the material level. And then suddenly, boom, there it is. So tuned into Universal Mind. That's how your life works. That's how right. your whole world unfolds. And it's just wonderful. So I recommend meditation as a foundational practice every day. Eco meditation is super easy to do. You just sit there, close your eyes, do 7 mechanical things with your body. And now you may want to do a lot more with meditation past that point. That'll get you to first base. And then if you get upset, if you get stressed, if bad things happen during the day, you tap, because that brings your cortisol level down, makes you calm. And those are the two practices that I think are really the foundation of a happy and connected life.
And Dawson, where can people find more information on that meditation practice and on the tapping?
Both of those you can get for free at my website, DawsonGift.com. Okay. And what I've got there is a collection of a dozen things. So there's a link to our nonprofit work, certified EFT practitioners, all of the workshops we do all over the world every year, because we have workshops East Coast, West Coast, Europe, all over the place. And we train people in these methods. And that's all at DawsonGift.com. And then eco meditation, again, it's 7 simple steps to doing it. Those are there at DawsonGift.com, along with an MP3 download. You can just download the MP3 for free. And I'll walk you through an eco meditation routine in about a 15-minute routine, as well as the free tapping manual. So that's all at DawsonGift.com. It's just kind of one place where you can find out all about all of those things.
Great. And Dawson, I'm so glad that you kind of talked about using meditation and starting your day and the effects that it has. You know, and it's great that meditation can handle stress, and we were talking about reducing stress, but I think in today's world, with so much coming at us and so much noise, a lot of times there's a lot of stress happening. We don't even realize we're stressed, right? And it's like meditation is a preemptive way to bring our attention back so that when something happens in the middle of the day that is stressful, and we may just automatically override it, if you have that awareness, you know, to come back and do tapping or do something to center yourself or calm yourself. That's so powerful. So
yeah, I think it is true that we have high levels of stress. When we test people for cortisol, often they're in fight or flight and there's nothing wrong in their lives. And they're right. basically safe and secure. And you test their cortisol level, look at their heart rate and heart, you know, all these biological markers, they look like they're in the jungle. And we just aren't meant to live that way. We're meant to live happy, low stress, healthy lives. And so, yeah, it is so essential to do this and to establish a healthy baseline.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you have a wild mind, Dawson, I think more power to you. That's probably why you create so much cool stuff. We didn't even get a chance to go over the amount you're doing. But when I read your bio, it was like reading a book in and of itself. So you contribute to Energy Psychology Journal. You started the National Institute for Integrative Health. You've got all these amazing books and research. And I do want to mention, and you already kind of mentioned it, but you have a book coming out with Hay House in June called Mind to Matter, The Astonishing Science on How Your Brain Creates Material Reality. Holy crap, I want to read that book. That sounds phenomenal. And your last book, The Genie in Your Genes, which we got to touch on a bit today. We could probably talk for like 4 more hours, but Dr. Dawson Church has other things to do today, so we're going to let him go.
I am reading Genie in Your Genes, by the way, and it's fascinating. I love it. Cool. It's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if you haven't gotten a chance, check it out. Genie in Your Genes. And Dr. Dawson Church, thank you so much for being here. We really, really appreciate your time. We look forward to seeing all your new research and writings coming out, and come back and hang with us again on Energy Matters sometime.
Thank you. I love what you two are doing and your message. And I'm so appreciative of the community you built around it and the passion you have for sharing it. So thank you again.
Thanks, Dawson. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you on the next episode of Energy Matters. Enjoy yourselves. Meditate. Stay calm.
Hey, everybody, that was an awesome episode. And what great motivation to sit down and meditate. It was an inspiration to listen to him talk about all the reasons why we should meditate and the effects it has really on the physiological level, right? As a longtime meditator, I'm well aware of the effects it has in a psychological, emotional, even just how it kind of feel at a body level through meditation. But to hear how much it really changes what's going on in the body is so powerful to get that kind of validation. So really excited to share this episode with everybody.
Changes in the genetic makeup of our bodies from what we think and feel was very well put by Dr. Church, except they've done studies on Cody. They've done MRIs on his head. And when he meditates, nothing changes. It's the weirdest thing. He's the only person that's ever happened to. But anyway,
once you reach enlightenment, everything stabilizes.
You know? Oh, that's what it is. That's what it is. Yeah. Just stable. Someone didn't plug the machine in. But now you can tell the intellectual level has dropped now that Dr. Church has left.
Right. There's the baseline that we return to.
Beep. And we just turn into giddy school children. That really was incredible. I could talk to him forever. Dr. Church, if you want to find more of his work, you can go to DawsonGift.com. He's got some free stuff on there around tapping and meditation. You could also check out some of his work at EnergyPsychologyJournal.org. And he has a new book coming out. You can pre-order it. It's called Mind to Matter, The Astonishing Science of How Your Brain Creates Material Reality. It is published by Hay House. It's going to be on Amazon and anywhere and everywhere else you can find books. That one's coming out June 12th. Dr. Dawson's got so much stuff on the internet. I don't think I could share it all, but he's an incredibly gifted, talented researcher, very enthusiastic about meditation, spirituality, consciousness, and how it intersects with science. Hope to have him back on the show sometime. And thank you all so much for listening. If you want to keep up to date with Cody and I, energymatterspodcast.com. And we hope to see you next time and meditate in between this episode and the next one.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters Podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.